the idea you have of like missing home is just based on this nostalgia that is stuck in time. So like if I went back now, 15 years down the line, I'm not going back to my life.
Joanna Hudricks still can't get her head around why people voted Leave in the Brexit referendum, especially as she loves living in England so much.
This is Writer's Mosaic, What We Leave We Carry, the series that tells the true life stories of migration to the UK.
My name is Joanna Margarida Martins Rodrigues. I am from Portugal, a little place called Sever do Voga, which is near Aveiro. I am from a little tiny village called Paradela do Voga, which is about, I want to say, 500 people in total. It's very, very beautiful. It sort of like sits in a valley where you have lots of forests and it has a beautiful river running along. It's got hidden waterfalls, it's got hidden lakes. It's an amazing place. My parents went to South Africa when I was about 10 months old, and that's where I grew up. And then my sister was born in South Africa, and then we left South Africa around 94, which was around Mandela being released and tensions getting quite high. When I was living in South Africa, it was very close to Johannesburg. It was a little town called Sasselburg in Orange Free State. Also very pretty place, like very green, full of beautiful rivers and like wild parks. And I still remember having a very happy childhood there, even though, and I guess I only realize that now, is that obviously I was living in segregated South Africa, but I didn't have that understanding at the time. At home, we were speaking Portuguese, but I went to an English school. So I was brought up bilingual. I studied languages and business relations. I did a Da Vinci scholarship, which is after you've studied, they give you a scholarship for you to go and work abroad, so get work experience. So I tried different options. I tried, you know, Berlin, ended up in London. It ended up by chance, really. And I had no sense what London would be like. My idea was I'm going to go for 3 months and I'll go back. I flew from Porto to Stansted. It was the time of the riots in London as well. My mom was crying. She was like, don't go. Where are you going? You can't. It's not the time. It doesn't look like a good place. And I was like, no, I'm going to go. It's just 3 months. What are you talking about? And to be fair, my sister, my younger sister, she was already in England. She was in Exeter. She was doing, work experience in their lab. She's a biologist. So she had been here a year already. And I was like, anything goes wrong. I mean, I've got Eliane. She's down in Exeter. And I had some cousins from South Africa who gave me lodgings at the time. I'll be fine. I can't be the end of the world. I packed my bags. My sister came to meet me. We spent a really nice weekend in London, like doing carnival. Nottingham Carnival was around that time they arrived. I arrived on the 17th of August. We stayed in this really dodgy hostel in Edgware Road. And then I remember walking from Notting Hill Carnival all the way to Edgware Road because we couldn't even figure out how to get on the tube. It was lovely. It was a really great introduction to London. And I remember, you know, lying in bed and just thinking, this place is amazing. There's so much going on. There's people from all walks of life, very different from the teeny tiny little village where I live, where I only have two neighbors and, you know, eucalyptus trees. It was quite like dazzling. I fell in love with it. Of course I was dazzled. The first couple of weeks, my cousins, my South African cousins, they agreed to put me up in the living room for a couple of weeks. And that's when the challenges start. So, okay, I was like the first few days in a hostel, then went down to Streatham where my cousins were living and I stayed in their living room. And I remember having this feeling that my cousin's girlfriend didn't love the idea of me being there because it's just a one bed, you know, the living room is their living space. And I worked really hard. Like I had a scholarship, so it's not like I didn't have money, but I could not ever get a room. And that's my first challenge in London, is that going for a room is like an interview. It's really hard. I'd see 5-7 flats a day, go through this really weird process of weird questions about me, my personality. What do I like to cook? How do I like to spend my evenings? What do I like to dress? What sort of drinks I like? And I think it was such a different experience from renting a room in Portugal that for me, it was quite hard. I kept getting no's and not being accepted, because that's when I got caught in this really weird loop, which was, I was only here for 3 months, so I couldn't get a room. I couldn't get a bank account because I didn't have an address. I couldn't get a job to pay me to my bank account because I didn't have a bank account. And I just kept going in circles like that. I had 3 months and I had to do this. It was kind of like volunteering at the Cartoon Museum, which is an amazing place. If you haven't been there, it's amazing. And so that took up 25 to 30 hours of my week. But, you know, I wanted to work as well, you know, because just thinking about rent and how much it costs and paying deposit, the scholarship wasn't even near enough. So I had to find a pub job. I was working in Notting Hill and I was living in this estate with this lady. It was a really dodgy place. I was coming back at like 3 a.m. walking alone. I was kind of like oblivious to the risks, right? But so I lived like that for 4 weeks. And then in the meantime, met my partner Mark. And we kind of like fell in love straight away. And we've been together since. I remember since meeting him that day, he came into the Cartoon Museum to hang a show. He was like, he's a volunteer tech. And, you know, we ended up hanging the same wall, just chatting films, just chatting music. And I thought, you know, I was very, I know music, I know films, but his head is like a library of things. He knows everything. He's so educated, he's so cultured, like he knew so much. I fell in love with him instantly. And I remember at lunch break he disappeared and he went to Gosh in Tottenham Court Road, and he went to get me the Red Shoes, like a DVD for me to, and he's like, you need to watch this film. And I watched the film and I was weeping with joy because it's the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. When I met Mark, I was like, I am in love, but this is going to be fun. You know, I'm going to leave in a few weeks, actually. I met him 6 weeks before leaving. You know, I've only been here for 6 weeks, but it was quite intense. You know, I kind of felt like he was the love of my life just from looking at him. I decided to apply for an internship at the Whitechapel Gallery. And I got it. So I got 6 months at the Whitechapel Gallery internship. It wasn't paid. They paid my expenses, you know, travel and food. I was like, brilliant. It works for me. So I was working at the pub and doing this internship. And I think it was in those 6 months that my mind just opened and I was going, I can't see myself going back. There's so much still I want to do and learn and work. And I didn't really foresee it. That's, I think, how I, without knowing, I started falling into a career. You know, in Portugal, you pay to go to a museum. And that's one of the things I loved about England, is that, you know, museums are free. I was binge drinking on culture in London. I would be like, every spare time I had, I'd go either to the RA and just like sit there and I'd hear people talk about art in ways I did not understand. And I just put my headphones in and just watch how people, you know, walk through museums and navigated it. And I was absolutely fascinated. All the time I was thinking how much I miss my friends. You know, the older you get, the harder it is to make friends, to make meaningful friends. And I sort of like could see myself navigating between my social life with the people I was working with, which is a very easy trap to fall into, right? And I had such a close camaraderie with my friends. Like, you know, my home policy and my mom's policy is the door was always open. We never knocked, you know, the door was never closed. And our family is big, so there would always be like aunties coming around, cousins, the neighbor, blah, 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 whatever. I miss that social life, which I didn't have in London, but I guess my life was being filled with all this other stimulus that I didn't give it too much thought. And, you know, I was always confident that I would make friends, which never happened. I would go home every once in a while, just a couple of days or a week. My dad is a nomad. He's always had that bug of like going places and working in places. And I think he always kind of like knew that me and my sister would probably stay. And if we didn't stay, it was fine. And if we came home, it would be fine. He's always supported that. I think it's changed slightly now because my sister's had a baby and, you know, him being grandparents, they are so in love, obviously, and they really want to be close to her. So sometimes they'll float the idea of like, oh, you could come back and maybe open a business together, like a tourism thing. But I don't think it's in the near future. I romanticize about it, yeah, because I miss the sun, I miss the beach, I miss my friends. And that's the weird place you get stuck in as an immigrant, I guess, is you go through a period, if you live away from home for a long time, you don't really know where home is anymore. Because I'm here, I call home home, like Portugal is home. And when I'm in Portugal on holiday, I was like, okay, I'm gonna go home now. So I'm caught in between. And the idea you have of like missing home is just based on this nostalgia that is stuck in time. So like if I went back now, 15 years down the line, I'm not going back to my life. I'm not going back to my friends. My friends are there, but you know, they've lives have moved on. They've had kids and they are different people. I'm a different person. So you kind of like get caught in that nostalgia that is not real. 100% I feel I'm definitely more English now than Portuguese. And I think that's the product of just how my life panned out, you know, my childhood in South Africa, then a period of teenage, young adult years in Portugal, and now my formative adult years here. I've kind of like spent almost the exact same amount of time in each place. We are that sort of family that talks very loudly on WhatsApp, like 3-4 times a week. But still, you're not there, you know, and as you start seeing them get frail, you start weighing in, like, where are the priorities? In Portugal, family is very important, and you take care of your elders, and you make sure you make sure they have a very comfortable life as they get older and they can't work. Here, it's weird because it's a bit different culture, right? You go like you don't have that same responsibility, or you know. And I speak to Mark's mum, and she's the first person to say, you know, I don't want to be a burden, which I find is a very hard word. I would never describe someone who's retiring or someone who's like getting older as a burden on anyone. Yeah, my mom and my dad always took care of their elders. My house always had someone, like my great grandmother. Then my mom's aunt, and then now my grandparents. So I've always had elderly people in the house, and maybe that's just my upbringing. I see it as a given. So I'm already thinking ahead of like, okay, how are my parents going to be taken care of? And my parents would definitely move to England now with my niece hanging around. It's just very expensive. And also the quality of life. I think me and my sister would discourage that because the quality of life they get here is it's quite different from the one they have there. I found out when I moved here, there's a huge Portuguese community in Stockwell, Vauxhall, around that area. And I remember my friend actually, who put me up for a couple of weeks, he was like, oh, you should move to Stockwell, because that's where all the Portuguese from. Like, that's the last thing I want to do. I don't want to leave home to come and live in Portugal. That's exactly the opposite I want to do. I want to leave quite far. So I've always lived north, always in London. Our food is like potatoes and rice and bread and a sprinkle of salad and then a lot of meat or a lot of fish. But it's tasty and it's hearty and it's cheap. We make it cheap. Francesinha is something I always, always recommend people go. I recommend it to all my friends who say, I'm going to visit Porto. And it's like, you have to do this. It's a layered sandwich, mammoth size, widespread bread. You get a layer of bread, a layer of cheese, a layer of beef, like steak. Then you get ham. Then you get chorizo and you get little sausages and then more cheese and then more beef. And then you layer this whole thing in a mountain and you cover it with cheese. And then you put this beer sauce on it. It's just nice, spicy beer sauce. You whack it a bit in the microwave or the oven to melt the cheese. And then they serve this with a fried egg on top and chips. It's my favorite Portuguese dish, but it's wrong in so many ways. No one I know can finish it, but I always go, you need to try. I noticed the food immediately. I was like, there's people, I mean, and I think it was bad, it was kind of prejudiced, but at the time I was like, these people eat rubbish. But I do love a cottage pie or a shepherd's pie, and I do love a sticky toffee pudding, and I hate fish and chips. It's not my bag. But I, and chips and vinegar, what is wrong with people? I don't understand. And Mark eats this really weird thing, which is chips inside a white bread, like a chip butty. I'm like, what is going on? But so I always cook Portuguese at home. I used to cook a lot more, but Mark is a good cook, but he cooks like very nice curry, so he would, or a cottage pie or a shepherd's pie. My parents, they visit us a lot because, you know, it's kind of cheap to come from Portugal here. So my mom will bring her whole farm in a suitcase. She will bring cabbage, which is fine because our cabbage is quite special. She'll bring onions. I'm like, Mom, there's onions in London. Like, the English have London. She'll bring peeled garlic. She'll bring cod, which salted cod you can't get here as nice. But she'll bring meats. She'll bring chorizos. She'll bring cheese. She'll bring the whole market. She'll bring in the suitcase. She once got through the airport because I said, oh, because I just bought the house, so let's do some gardening work. She bought a scythe in the suitcase. One thing I do appreciate, I have to say, which completely changed my life, and I don't like going to Portugal because of that, is fish. The fish here doesn't have bones. You go and buy it ready to eat. Where in Portugal, I need to be navigating, and I don't like bones. I'm really squeamish with them. So I love the fish here. Yeah, I love going to the fishmonger, and they just do it for you, and you go like, oh, I'm in heaven. Because we love fish in Portugal, but it's full of bones. Brexit came as a punch, I think, in the gut, really. I think when you live in places like London or Brighton or what I like, more urban places, you kind of like, you're sucked into this bubble where you kind of like think that everyone thinks like you or whatever. But I, at the time, I didn't really think it was going to, you know, that Leave was going to win. I remember sitting in a pub down in Dalston, really young crowd, we were sitting outside, and you know, we found out that Leave had won, and I think I went white, and like the whole discourse, you kind of understand how politicians talk, you know it's lies, you know it's bullshit, I don't know if I can say that, but you don't think that people will believe it, you know, the rhetoric. I remember having a conversation with someone in Mark's family about Brexit before it happened, and we were at the dinner table, we'd had a few glasses of wine, and he was going, you know, but now I'm going to definitely vote Leave, because you know the problem with immigrants is like they're coming here and we can't go to the doctor and they're stealing our jobs. And I said, you realize you're talking about me, like I am that person. And going back to the pub where we're sitting, Leave won. And these guys next to us were like 30, they were really young. And we started just chatting, can you believe that happened? I was like, yeah, I was canvassing for Leave. I'm like, do you understand what that means? And he's like, yeah, all these millions are going back into the NHS. I'm like, I would wish that I could meet you in 10 years time and have a laugh about what you think was gonna happen with that money. This money that does not exist, that never got paid, because money circulates, it goes back and forth. You know, opportunities like mine of coming out of Portugal with a scholarship to do an internship, or my sister who now is doing, you know, she's doing her PhD here because she had a chance through European funding to come and study and contribute to the scientific community here. I think where the ignorance, and excuse my maybe like derogative term, is that the ignorance was not understanding who they were voting against or what they were voting against. There's an irony when you think about how many expats does England have when it gets to their sweet little spot of like, oh, I've got my money, I'm retired, I'm just gonna go to Spain or to Portugal. I mean, you go to the south of Portugal, I would say like about 40% of the population now in the Algarve is Portuguese, if any, you know, mostly people from England. And we don't have a problem with that. The dreams that I do remember, I definitely am dreaming Portuguese. which is weird because Portuguese is not my mother, like my first language, right? The first language I started speaking was English. I don't know what that means. I think it's, but I find myself, I count in English, you know, when you're counting. When I'm spelling, I have to spell, like if I'm spelling a word out loud, it's easy in Portuguese. I sort of like my, I think my brain is all over the place. Like I'm ambidextrous, right, with languages. But I think my most natural place is speaking in English. Texting my family, actually, there's words I can't find in Portuguese anymore. And it's very funny for me actually going home, and my sister, we have this chat a lot every time we go home and we're talking with our friends, their Portuguese sounds very weird. And we were wondering why this was. They sound very posh, very bureaucratic, very adult almost. And we were having this chat. We think it is, obviously when we left, we were talking uni language. And it doesn't matter if 15 years have passed. For us, that's the Portuguese we know. So we go home and we sound like students, like kids, not a very sophisticated Portuguese. And for us, our friends sound like these very sophisticated people. Even listening to the news, sometimes we have to write emails in Portuguese. And the language in Portugal is, you know, you write 5,000 paragraphs to what an English person would say in a sentence. The UK has been very kind to me. You know, you hear experiences, other experiences of people who have been, you know, not so fortunate. You know, obviously you make your own luck as well, to a certain extent, but you also need to be lucky. And everyone I've met, you know, from the people I've worked with, from Mark, I've just had a very, very happy journey here. And, you know, I want to feel welcome, continue to feel welcome here, and not feel like I am an alien or a burden, or, you know, someone who's not contributing to the amazing place that England is.
Joanna Odrigues was talking to Ellie Dobing.